Good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society in a little different format today than we usually have. I am Barbara Chatterton. I'm chair of the Hospitality Committee and a longtime member of Prairie. We're gathering here today, our hearts alive with hope that here we will be truly seen, that we will be welcomed into the garden of this community where the simple and the elegant, the fluted and the frilled, the shy and the dramatic complement one another and are treasured. May we know that here each contributes in their own way to the beauty of the whole. All are welcome, all genders, sexualities, politics, clappers, non-clappers, progressive or conservative. May we root ourselves in the values of this community: compassion, courage, transcendence, and justice. Prairie programming, like our namesake, is a mixture, just like the prairie is outside, which is growing back up from the burning. We have presentations by friends and members of the congregation, or today, outside speakers on a variety of different topics. Our offering today is going to be dedicated to the Tenant Resource Center. The opening words today: one word can end a fight. One hug can start a friendship. One smile can bring unity. One person can change your entire life. Israel Moore Alvor. We are very pleased to have Jean Papalia here today. She is speaking on QPR, glad you asked. And unfortunately, I lost the thing that she wrote out to introduce her properly. I am so sorry. You found it, okay, good. And it's not covered with tuna salad or anything, that's good. So Jean retired in 2012 from the Madison Police Force after 26 years as a patrol officer. She worked the majority of her career downtown, including as the Williamson Street neighborhood officer and as a mental health liaison to the department. In 2008, she became a QPR suicide prevention trainer, thanks to the support of Safe Communities Madison Dane County. She has trained more than 2,000 people in suicide prevention, but it isn't enough. She is a co-founder of Safe Storage, a state communities project to stop gun suicides. We are very happy to welcome Jean here this morning. Andy, I'll let you start with the movie. Always good to start with a movie.
Research shows that the odds of surviving a heart attack in a public place are 10 times greater in regions where thousands of ordinary citizens are trained in CPR. It's called bystander rescue. When someone shows signs of experiencing cardiac arrest, the response of nearby friends, family, or coworkers is critical. The effective use of CPR doubles or triples one's chances of surviving a heart attack. Like CPR, QPR is an emergency intervention for someone experiencing a life-threatening crisis. QPR is easy to learn and easy to remember, but it takes courage to overcome our fears about reaching out to help someone who may be considering suicide. Research also shows that where QPR is widely taught, suicide attempts and deaths decrease. Just like CPR, QPR requires quick, bold, and informed action. Because suicide, like heart attacks, remains a rare event, we must train hundreds to save one, thousands to save hundreds, and millions to save thousands. There is an old Welsh saying, "No great misery goes unspoken." When we have a toothache, we tell people. We don't hide our pain. But because of the stigma and taboo around the word suicide, many people considering suicide don't speak plainly about their suffering. They fear our rejection. They fear that if they say something, we will ridicule them or make fun of them. As a result, people thinking about suicide often use indirect language. They hint at what they're thinking of doing. They send us coded messages, and they suffer in silence. Called suicide warning signs, QPR training teaches you how to recognize these warning signs, quickly decode them, and then question the person in an informed and compassionate manner to learn if they are considering suicide. Just as talking about physical pain helps diminish it, talking about suicide with someone willing and able to listen reduces psychological pain almost immediately. Trained QPR gatekeepers are merchants of hope, and hope helps prevent suicide. Millions of people have now been trained in QPR. Rigorous independent research studies support QPR as effective, and thousands of personal stories assure us that QPR is saving lives. When you use QPR, not everyone will be suicidal. Some people are simply stressed to the breaking point, but they still need help. Help you can give. Please note that you cannot put the idea of suicide into someone's mind. People are either thinking about suicide or they're not. The fear of putting the idea of suicide into someone's head is a myth that keeps us from acting when we should do just the opposite. QPR is a universal intervention for people in pain, whether they're thinking about suicide or not. While it takes a special courage to overcome our fears, we will teach you how to ask about suicide and to offer hope through listening. Listening is the power tool that restores hope in the hopeless. We know you can do this, and we will show you how. Preventing suicide. It's what people do.
If I had an hour, I'd be honored to train you all in QPR and send you forth as gatekeepers, or the phrase I love to use, I want everyone to be a merchant of hope. I teach QPR for free to anyone willing to come, and we can talk more about where you can join me for free training. But in the time I have with you now, I want to talk about suicide prevention using a public health approach. The public health approach is simply a framework to be used to consider how to problem solve and respond to a potential crisis. So here, Andy will click through this. What's the problem? What risk factors are the cause? What works? And how do you do it? I want to talk about risk factors for suicide, but I also want to talk about protective factors. Think of it like a playground seesaw. Where we recognize and acknowledge risk factors for suicide, yet as a community, we promote protective factors in order to balance out the risk factors. And here's the good news. Protective factors benefit us as a community in so many ways. In 2017, we lost 917 people in Wisconsin to suicide. And in Dane County, we lost 70 people, which is more than a person a week. But by contrast, we lost 710 people to breast cancer. And suicide is the number one cause of violent death. When I was growing up, and many of you may remember these times as well, it was entirely inappropriate to say the word breast and say the word cancer. You whispered, cancer, because if you said it out loud, you'd bring it to you. I have endless respect for Susan G. Komen Foundation, who in one generation brought the conversation of breast cancer to mainstream conversation. We talk passionately about research and treatment and care and survival. We proudly wear pink ribbons. Entire football teams send their support and encouragement. I have a neighbor who has an enormous pink ribbon attached to her house that lights up at night on the roof, and she is a survivor. Respect for Susan G. Komen, yes, but also in my case, a little bit of jealousy. I think I need to take a page from her playbook. When we lose a loved one to suicide, and as you can see, that number surpasses breast cancer deaths and continues to grow rather than level off or decline, we don't lose someone after a courageous battle with cancer. In the obituary, our loved ones just die unexpectedly. We cannot possibly talk about suicide. Many people feel uncomfortable talking to family and the survivors or attending the funeral, Suicide deaths provoke questions of shock and anger and guilt or depression, and that unanswerable question of why, just echoes sadly. But while every suicide is a tragedy, and most likely people in the room have a connection to someone lost to suicide, we never talk about it. We don't start the conversation about it. And we don't even dare to use terms like solvable or preventable when talking about suicide. But suicide is not a mystery. It's well studied. We know from research that these are the risk factors for suicide. We know that depression and certain other mental illnesses, particularly schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, play a large role. We also know drug and alcohol dependence and abuse. In fact, 90% of all suicides are those two, drug and alcohol dependence and depression or other certain mental illnesses. Impulsiveness, aggressiveness, anxiety, and rage play a role. In fact, anxiety plays a much bigger role than we previously knew. A family history of suicide. Now, that's not to say that suicide runs in the family. More likely, it's the genetic predisposition to depression that continues to go untreated through a family. A previous attempt at suicide can also put someone at a higher risk. About a third of the people who die by suicide have had a relationship crisis in the weeks preceding their death. Recent losses or setbacks, withdrawals from supports can also contribute. Many people describe feeling trapped or no sense of purpose. And feeling trapped can sometimes look like a benefit to us. The young man talked about he had been given a college scholarship to play football, the first one in his family. He was champion of the state team for his town. Everything was riding on him. He'd be the first one to go to college in his family. But yet he told his guidance counselor he was just looking for a way to make all the pressures go away. So we would have viewed him as having everything going for him, but he himself was feeling incredibly stressed. But often people talk about feeling hopeless. So this depression and certain other mental illnesses is a risk factor. So let me show you what this list looked like. This is a depression screening tool. There's no blood test or x-ray for depression. They simply are going to ask questions, and this is how we find out. In fact, this seems like a lot of questions. The first two questions are pretty effective. Have you felt sad or empty every day for the last 2 weeks? Have you lost interest in previously enjoyable activities? Have you noticed changes in how you sleep, how you eat, how you interact with people? You can't concentrate, indecision, like the bad seed. Do you feel like you're in a dark can by yourself? Depression is a very common medical disorder, but it's also very treatable. In fact, 60 to 80% of the time, people respond to treatment. People get better and people recover. But depression is fatally coded in stigma, all of which is untrue. Things like depression is a weakness, or depression is the result of poor parenting, or depression is a moral shortcoming, or it's something that people make up to get attention. It's something you can cure yourself by just going to Door County for a weekend. No. Depression is the most common mental health disorder, and it's treatable and manageable, usually with therapy, sometimes medication, and always with support and care from those close to you. If you hear nothing else today, take away the message that seeking treatment and encouraging someone to seek treatment for depression is fundamentally how we show affirmation for life, worth, and dignity for every person. We know that recognizing risk factors and taking bold action to help people in a crisis works. That's what QPR is all about. But we also know that creating a loving, protective community is just as powerful and is key to prevention. So we have two parts on each slide. The risk factor slide are known risk factors for suicide. In this case, we know that job problems, financial problems, eviction and housing problems, poverty, particularly in later life, are also risk factors. So when we promote fair wages, access to benefits, government and non-government programs that support people during a financial crisis. We are preventing suicide. As mentioned earlier, we know that treatment for mental illness and addictions can be effective. So anything we can do to promote access to care, to address provider shortages in underserved areas, to urge people to seek help in a time of crisis will prevent suicide. When we talk about addictions in a voice of compassion and use our voice of support and encouragement with non-stigmatizing language, we can help someone get better. Dr. Thomas Joyner, perhaps one of the most passionate and respected scholars in suicide, was asked on a radio interview, if he could fix one thing to prevent suicide, what would that be? And he answered it with a single word, relationships. Anything we can do to promote social connection means we tackle isolation. And nothing is more life-affirming than when we reach out to someone who is in a crisis, sometimes a place so dark that they have completely lost their way. When we specifically work to honor the role of people in our community, such as seniors and volunteers, wise elders and treasured children, we foster relationships. We break down barriers and we grow compassion and understanding. As a merchant of hope, we bring that light to the darkness. People need to be needed and know they're valued for who they are, wherever they are in their life. Other risk factors: unable to problem solve, anxiety, a lack of skill for coping and crisis resolution, feeling hopeless and helpless. Do not allow yourself to think, to mistake a problem with an expense. A flat tire is an expense. The breakdown of a valued friendship is a problem because no amount of money can fix that. But when we continually work to develop problem-solving skills, when we purposely develop and practice problem-solving skills, we feel a great sense of control over our lives, and we can manage stress and anxiety. We build resilience. The copyrighted tagline for QPR is, "Ask a question, save a life." Promote QPR training, but if it's not QPR, I'm just happy for any evidence-based program that looks to educate people on how to take bold action. There's others that are out there. They're all good. My husband said we'd get invited to more parties if I just said I was retired and stopped right there and didn't sally forth about information about suicide, the statistics, and the toll it takes. So please, join me in being that socially awkward person who talks about suicide, because it's a conversation worth having. Suicide is complex, but so is religion and parenting and growing old and climate change and preparing homemade pasta sauce. But that doesn't make suicide a, well, what you gonna do about it topic. It's a topic of urgent importance. And my loved one who may be living with a mental health problem or an addiction issue needs my support, not humiliation or stigmatizing language. And in closing, let me thank you for allowing me to share this time with you on this fine May day. And I'm honored to be here, and I welcome any of your questions or discussion. And I'll say that right now, right here in Wisconsin, there's a task force for suicide prevention going on. And they're having listening sessions that are going throughout the entire state. And I am working with other people to say, we really need to talk about a wide range of ideas. I don't want you to say, well, we gave $50,000 to the Hope Line and I think we got this thing done. You know, it needs to be more. And you're absolutely right. to take a mental health worker and expect them to solve it all just isn't going to work, not when they're seeing, you know, people as fast and as hard as they can. Absolutely. And when sometimes people say, I worked with this woman, I was the crossing guard, I did the morning, she did the afternoon, and I said, I've got this, like, you know, thing I got to do in the morning, can we switch and I'll do the afternoon, you do the morning, and I said, it's just a little training thing. And I just left it at that, because whenever I say, oh, I'm doing suicide prevention, it's like, oh, it's never going to go well. So she said, sure, and she said, well, what do you train? And I'm like, when they ask, I said, it's on suicide prevention. And she said, I lost my dad to suicide. I didn't know that at all. She said, I would do anything to have him back. I'll work any morning when you're going to do that. And I had known her for quite a while. And there's other people. I mean, when you start the conversation, it's like this secret club that we all know somebody. But, you know, like my husband tells me, you know, but when you start the conversation at the party about, you know, it is a difficult topic to just simply talk about. But, you know, saying cancer was difficult too, and we're not there anymore. So when we can talk about it, you know, openly, it's not a failure. Somebody died because they had a mental order or a mental disorder or a substance abuse addiction, and they didn't get the help they need at the time, you know, and we miss them terribly, and we grieve them, just like we would if they had died of old age or getting hit by a car or any number of things. It's just as sad and tragic, and we miss them the same. Yeah, I've often said that people will ask that question, is there a time when you should be able to take your life? And my dear friend Sue, who lost her brother to suicide, says, absolutely. And that decision should be made when you are in no pain and under no illness and under no mental illness at the time, physical or mental illness. And she said, if you are in that condition, I think you get to make that choice. But I have yet to see someone. So I'll tell you, my part-time job, I know this sounds strange, so I work for the Department of Health Services, and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention collects the data on violent deaths, and they get it from every state. So I'm the person for Wisconsin who reads all the homicides, all the suicides, all the undetermined deaths, and I read the coroner's report, the police report, the toxicology, the autopsy. I get to be the fly on the wall for all the suicides here in Wisconsin. Well, it's the vast majority of suicides. I get an occasional, you know, murder in Milwaukee or whatever, but or an occasional undetermined. But almost to a T, it involves just becoming overwhelmed. Pain, people say, in their suicide notes, which I am privileged to read their last thoughts, almost universally start out with an apology, I'm sorry, and I can't go on anymore. I just can't take it anymore. They have just reached their end. And then, much like what the video showed, I think the world would be better off without me. I just can't do it anymore. I'm more of a burden. And that sense of burdensomeness and a sense that they're isolated because whatever they do just doesn't turn out right. They have too much problem, not enough give back to the community, is extremely common. And I know that all the people in Wisconsin are not, that die by suicide, are not connected. They're not like having conversations like, what are you going to put in your note? What are you going to put in your note? I mean, so it's amazing that there's this like universal theme that appears in suicide notes. Some I see and some I don't, just because the way, you know, the documentation comes through. But it's almost, you know, does make me wonder if there isn't just kind of a breaking point that people reach. Kevin Hines is a gentleman who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, and he lived. He's one of the 19 people that lived, of the over, I think it's 500, who jumped off and died. And he said, just like the, he said, I'm going to tell you what the other 19 people told me and have continued to say. The minute I let go of the bridge, I realized I had made a mistake. That all the problems that I thought were problems weren't problems now. They were solvable. What was unsolvable was that I was, you know, falling into the bay. And I think that's the suicide that you're talking about, where it's solvable, where we can work together, that it's, and we know that suicide is an extremely transient feeling. One person said, sometimes it's just one more dawn. In other words, Just one more day can change things. And among young people, suicide is particularly difficult because that youth and impulsiveness, let's admit, when we get older, we're like, eh, we'll just let her ride a day. You know, we've kind of saw that, you know, I'll just take a break, you know. And sometimes we have that ability, plus we have the years of problem solving and experience. You know, my daughter always says to me, how do you know all this stuff? And I said, well, because I've been around like almost three times as long as you. You know, I mean, like, sheer time helps, you know. So that's part of what to consider, too, is that don't let someone make a very rash decision over something that is really quite solvable. But remember, when you're living with depression, you know, what depression does is tell you can't change. This is how you've always been. So this is, depression coats you with this idea of an inability to see the option to relieve your suffering. That's what depression is. You think you've always been this way. That's how you were when you were young. That's how you're going to be when you're old. Maybe that's even how part of your family's been. So when you sit there and you tell them, I can help you, you need to change, I can help this, we can do this, there'll be a little bit of resistance. Because remember, this disease tells them nothing's going to change. So it was really easy as a cop because you had much more power to kind of, oh yeah, you're coming with me. You know, we call that like using the power to the good. You know, it wasn't an arrest power, it was a life-affirming power that we often used. I mean, there were a number of times when, I admit, it was probably questionable policing on, you know, entry and a number of other things that got me into somebody's house that said, no, you're not going to end it this way. If you want to kill yourself, it's not going to be on my shift. You can do it later. You're going to come with me now. And a lot of that is the impulsivity, the inability to problem solve, the lack of support, no one to call, feeling isolated, overwhelmed. It's all those complex things coming together. I must admit, most people don't think about Mendota and see it as a place of great hope. But, you know, that's not their first thought. But when people would go there, I found everything from the guard who opened the gates to the admission people were calm, tender, compassionate, and pretty much knew that these people needed help right now, and they were going to give them that help. It was amazing. All right, thank you very much.
The benediction for today is this by Theodore Parker. Be ours a religion which, like sunshine, goes everywhere. Its temple, all spaces, its shrine, the good heart, its creed, all truth, the ritual works of love, its profession of faith, divine living. Good words to live by. Please greet your neighbor.